Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Quick reminder for everybody listening to the podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe on iTunes and on Stitcher. Remember, please rate the podcast, review it. Please say something nice if you can, too. And, of course, you can find all the Between the Ropes podcasts at SoundCloud now. And if you could, please support the podcast by going to Patreon as well. You'll be a saint. Just go to patreon.com/betweentheropes. So I thought now would be a good time to speak with Kevin Eck. Because there's a lot of stuff going on creatively with WWE, and I figured now would be a pretty good time considering you recently had a very public meltdown about your fantasy football team, and your Ravens have fallen off a cliff this year.
That's why you bring me on here, to humiliate me about my fantasy football team and my reality football team?
I wanted to take your mind off of those things and talk about wrestling.
Take my mind off it by bringing it up right away. That's not really good strategy.
I wanted to explain a backstory here. It's the complete story.
Well, things can only get better, as they say, right? The football teams hit rock bottom. The Ravens are 4-9. They've got all kinds of injuries. Fantasy football team, the biggest underachieving fantasy football team probably ever. Fielding an all-star team, yet finished 5-8. Same record as your lousy team. Mm. But, you know, eventually things... Fortunes will have to turn around, and we're looking forward to next season. As Bill Belichick would say, we're on to 2016.
You keep this up, and next year when you invite me to this fantasy league, we'll see if I accept or not. So you can take my money.
Well, yeah, you're donating this year, just like me.
I am. I'm trying to make it up for it in another league. So I'm still alive in my longtime league, but yeah. We'll see what happens there.
We played each other this past week I guess they call it the consolation.
I got blown. You doubled me up, I think, didn't you?
I was gonna say, what was the score of that? Wasn't it like 105-50 something?
It was something rather embarrassing. You crushed me. Like I owed you money or something, even though I'd already paid up for the league. In fact, I'm bringing it up right now. Oh my God, 105-59. How does this happen?
Now my team decided, well, now that we're out of the playoffs, now everything starts coming together. Well, what can you do?
You actually, that's the second time you beat me this year.
Yeah.
God. Well, at least a certain somebody from a certain wrestling company got eliminated from the playoffs this year, so we don't have to hear his big mouth and the smack talk anymore.
Yeah, he peaked a little too early, I think.
He did.
Yeah.
It was all about the team name. That was so much better.
BFD.
Yes, BFD, to say the least. So let's get into WWE, because like I said, I think now it's a pretty interesting time creatively, because I think we've all been sitting here going, where's all this leading to? Because WrestleMania is not too far off in the future. And then the conundrum that has been Roman Reigns at WWE trying to elevate him to the top of the card, but also get the fans behind him. And quite honestly, I thought the booking between TLC and Raw the following night during that 24-hour period was probably some of the best WWE's done in a while. There was definitely some loopholes, and there's some little problems with some of the logic in there. But come the end of the day, Reigns is the champion, and everybody was cheering for him in a city that had hated him before. So I think WWE's finally gotten things on the path they wanted to be on.
Yeah, I agree. It really was quite an amazing turnaround. You know, I've been a Roman Reigns fan pretty much from the beginning. I think he should have won the title at WrestleMania originally, you know, instead of hot-shotting it, you know, with Seth coming in and cashing in and doing that whole thing. I think it would have been interesting to see what would have happened had they stayed the course, which the plan, you know, going back over a year, obviously, was to put the title on Reigns, have Lesnar drop it to him. Could they have gotten him over? Would it have been a disaster? You know, I don't know. We'll never know. But even after that, I just kept thinking, let's just get to it. You know, Reigns is the guy. Clearly, he's the one that Vince wants to start building around. So let's just go with it. And that, you know, the more they delayed it and the more he kept having one more obstacle to overcome, I understood the thinking, which was give him a mountain to climb, because there really wasn't a big chase leading up to that. that match against Lesnar at WrestleMania. But the more he got opportunities and kept coming up short and failing, the more I was like, I don't know if that's doing more harm than good. He's starting to be like the Lex Luger, you know, the guy that gets a million shots at Ric Flair but can never beat him. And after a while, you're just like, well, you know, you just lose faith in the guy. I even got to the point where I was like, man, do you turn him heel? Do you do this once Rollins got hurt and you did the whole, you know, tournament thing? I even threw out there, why don't we recreate the whole Rock, you know, people's corporate champion kind of thing where he turns heel and becomes the authorities guy. And maybe then after a long run as a heel or, you know, however long you want to do it, then you pull the trigger and turn him babyface. Maybe that will get him over. But I must say, WWE stayed the course. You know, Vince was, you know, stubborn or resolute, whichever way you want to look at it. And he finally said, all right, we're pulling the trigger on this thing. And we're not turning him heel where he's going to be the top babyface champion, just like we had envisioned. And, you know, it really seemed to work. I never understood, as you know, all the hatred towards Roman Reigns anyway. It seemed like something that really snowballed because Daniel Bryan was making a comeback and Roman Reigns was not Daniel Bryan. And that seemed to be the biggest, his biggest crime against humanity was he wasn't Daniel Bryan. And the fans just crapped all over him. I never understood it. Reigns is a guy who loves the business. He grew up in the business. He works his ass off. He looks the part. You know, I just never understood why there was such a rejection of him other than he wasn't Daniel Bryan. And, well, this is the guy Vince is telling us to cheer for, so we're not going to do it because we're smart marks.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's there now, and the fans seem to be with him. Who knows if they can maintain it? I hope they do. I don't know. What time will tell on that, whether this was just a moment in time and those fans in Philly got caught up in seeing a title change and seeing Vince out there and all those things, which you can't – obviously, you're not going to hotshot like that every time you see Roman Reigns. He's not going to have Stephanie slapping him. He's not going to have Vince out there to take a Superman punch. He'll have to exist on his own after that. But this is certainly a good first step, and I think it's well-deserved. You know, I think Reigns is a guy – like I said all along, like I never understood what people didn't see in him. This wasn't like, you know, going back many years, this wasn't like Eric Watts was being given the top spot in the company because he was the booker's son. I mean, Roman Reigns is legit. And, you know, I'm glad people have finally been able to get over whatever it was they had against the guy.
Well, I think some of it was just the verbiage he was given for promos. And, I mean, I've said this plenty of times, and I think you have too. I've been around the guy a little bit. You know, I've seen him in public, and I've heard him do different interviews. I mean, he's charismatic. It's just some of the stuff that they give him is just has not been that great. And, you know, he's paying the price for that because he's getting scripted stuff that doesn't really fit his character. That's not him. And he has a hard time in turning that around to make it be him. I guess that's between that and the Daniel Bryan thing, that's kind of the biggest sin. But they overcame that now with, you know, keep stacking the deck and putting him in the right situation now. And I thought it was a really, really smart move from WWE standpoint in saying, okay, let's really go all the way. And they went with the evil McMahon family. So it was Triple H taking a beating. It was Stephanie slapping him. And it was Vince McMahon coming out there as the coup de grace, which, hell, we haven't seen Vince in over a year. And so they brought Vince out. And he was playing over the top, Mr. McMahon, to say the least. But, I mean, it all worked for what they did. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit for that. I give a lot of credit to freaking 70-year-old Vince McMahon taking a bump, man. I mean, dear God.
It's a tried and true formula that, you know, when ratings are down or when you try to, you know, you need to turn things around, you trot out, you know, the old man. And it works, you know. And like you said, Stephanie played her part perfectly. Hunter took the beating at TLC. And let's not leave Sheamus out of this either.
No.
Because, again, Sheamus is a guy who the fans saw as undeserving and really shouldn't have been the champion and so forth. And, again, when it's like, okay, well, here are my choices. Think about this from a fan standpoint. Well, it's okay. It's Sheamus, who I don't really like. And I've seen him over the years. He gets to a certain level, but I don't think he's a top guy. He's the champion now. Do I really want him? Or let me look at this other guy over here, Roman Reigns. All right, he's younger, he's fresher. You know, maybe he's not. I think it made people look and say, well, you know, maybe he's not such a bad alternative between Sheamus and Roman Reigns. I think I like this guy.
Right.
And then you throw in the McMahon factor, and I think everything, you know, in spite of themselves, the people in Philly, they just had to. They had to like Roman Reigns. I don't think they wanted to. I don't think they planned on it. I think it was the same thing at TLC. You know, it was just. It really was smart booking, and it's very obvious. Like, you know, stack the deck and bring out the McMahons and all that. It's very obvious, but it worked. And I love it when, you know, what does the guy say? I love it when a plan comes together. And that's what happened. A plan came together. Now let's just hope WWE can build off of that and really continue to take Reigns in the right direction. Let's not have him, you know, cutting kind of silly promos anymore. Or it's a fine line. What people want out of their babyface heroes now, especially a guy that looks like Reigns. He's not the underdog, right? He's not Daniel Bryan. He's a totally different character. Think of if Roman Reigns continues to be, you know, portrays the cool, you know, man of a few words, kind of badass type babyface, and doesn't get too cute, then I think WWE is onto something. You know, they have to resist the urge to make him too, quote unquote, entertaining.
Yeah.
And as long as they can, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin was, you know, the biggest ass kicker and all that. He could still be entertaining, but he never lost that kind of that ass kicker edge to him. I think that's what they need to do with Roman Reigns.
I totally agree. And I think that where they're at right now, and by the way, I love the A-Team reference before, but I think that they're taking the game plan from Stone Cold. Now, it's obvious that there's, you know, Roman and Austin are two different people, and that you know, Austin obviously is a little bit of a better talker, but if you use that game plan and you use this whole war between the family and him and trying to keep him from the championship, you know, in kind of an updated or kind of tweak it the way they're doing it now, I think it makes a lot of sense. That's why we talked about this even before we started. We both are in the midst of writing columns about where we think WWE is going when it comes to WrestleMania. And to me, it makes the most obvious sense that it should probably be Roman against Triple H, with the Authority screwing with Reigns all along the way, trying to make his life miserable until they finally get the big revenge match, the grudge match between Roman and Hunter. It's funny too, because like I don't think it's going to happen. I would love to see Vince as a regular character, not every week, but maybe every 2-3 weeks, something like that. I'd like to see him on TV more. I don't think we're going to get that, but I think it's just going to be up to the Authority to make Reigns' life a living hell. But I think that's where they're going to go now. As weird as it sounds, you know, they could do that match, obviously, at the Rumble. They could do it before Mania. But with where they're going with it right now, I think that one makes the most sense.
I agree. We're on the same page on that one. And I don't think they're going to do it at Rumble just because, look, Hunter rarely ever gets in the ring these days. But when he does, it's at WrestleMania, okay? I don't know that, correct me if I'm wrong, but has he been in the ring since he faced Sting last year or this past WrestleMania? I don't think he has.
No, right? He hasn't.
Right. So, I don't think Hunter's coming back for a match at the Royal Rumble. I think he wants to be on the big stage, and rightfully so at this point. That's where he belongs. I think Reigns versus Triple H is your WrestleMania match. Now,
is it for the championship, though?
Well, here's what I think, and this is what I'm writing as right before we got on the phone here, is as the champion, Reigns obviously is going to face the winner of the Royal Rumble. I'm wondering if maybe there's a scenario where Triple H puts himself in the Rumble as a surprise entrant, where maybe he's number 30.
Yes.
And he comes out, he can stack the deck, right? He's the Authority. Is that he puts himself in at number 30, and because he's got something to prove, you know, after what Reigns did to him at TLC. And no more puppet champions for him. Rather than rely on a Sheamus or a Seth Rollins, he's going to take matters into his own hands now after the beatdown that he took at TLC. So to ensure that he gets that title shot at WrestleMania, he books himself in the Rumble, gets number 30, wins it, and I think he could do that match on the big stage. I don't think Hunter, I just think that's too big of a match to do as well. That's the match before WrestleMania. We'll just do that at the Rumble. I just don't see that happening.
I agree.
Hunter's going to be... I'm 99.9% sure, okay, that Hunter is going to be on the WrestleMania card. I believe that every, you know, he's going to be like Undertaker for a long, he's going to be the guy, if he wrestles once a year, it's going to be at WrestleMania. And if you don't do Reigns and Hunter, I don't know what Hunter does at Mania other than maybe, this is kind of a wild card, is maybe because Dean Ambrose is kind of an anti-establishment guy, if you could do something there with Hunter and Dean, if Hunter wants to work with one of the younger guys. But I just don't think that makes as much sense as doing Hunter and Roman on the big stage.
The only other guy that I was thinking of that you could do with Hunter is if it fit in the schedule for Batista, but I don't think it does. And it's funny you say that with a scenario, because I'm saying the same exact thing, that I think the way that they could do it is not only could Hunter come in 30th, but the League of Nations, like Lesnar is in the Rumble, and you think he's going to win it, but then the League of Nations screws him over. And I think what that would set up then, too, because you're wondering, where does this leave Lesnar for Mania? I think that would put, whether people like it or not, I think it puts Lesnar against Sheamus.
Well, that's funny, because I thought Lesnar and Sheamus was a match that could have taken, you know, I wrote a couple months ago, you know, five potential opponents for Lesnar at WrestleMania, and Sheamus is one of them. Also, I said if that were to happen, though, WWE has a lot of work to do as far as rehabilitating Sheamus, because at one time, I think when he was really portrayed as an ass kicker, you know, you could really see, all right, that two big bulls, I could see that as a match. But the way he's been booked up until just this past week, really, it's like, well, he would be no match. Sheamus would be no match for Lesnar. Lesnar would kill him. Now, the performance that Sheamus put on at TLC, where he, you know, he looked every bit Roman Reigns equal, and the next night too on Raw. Maybe he got some of that aura back. I don't know if he's got enough back, though, that people would see Lesnar against Sheamus without a title involved, if that's a match people would really, you know, if that's a big money WrestleMania match people would be invested in.
Right.
I don't know.
Well,
possible.
The whole thing is trying to piece together everything, because if that's the direction to go with Hunter and Reigns on top, then you got to sit there and look at some of the other big players, and that's, what do you do with Cena? What do you do with Taker? What do you do with Lesnar? So that's why, and, you know, you could sit here and think of maybe, and, you know, I know there's a lot of people talking about, could they do Lesnar against Kevin Owens, which, who knows, maybe they could. I mean, they started doing some with Owens this past week and trying to make him a badass, or more of a badass. So maybe that is something. But I just think, in their eyes, I think the Sheamus match would be more viable. I think that leaves you for Cena against Taker. And then you figure out the rest of the card. I don't know where that leaves Kevin Owens. I don't know where that leaves Dean Ambrose. Well, Dean Ambrose, I think, is taking on Chris Jericho. I feel really, really good about that one. But I don't know where they go with the rest of this. They can kind of piece it together. But I think those are kind of your top matches.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the Ambrose and Jericho thing. I'd like to believe that you know, that whole scenario where Jericho was the mystery partner with Reigns and Ambrose wasn't, you know, I believe that was done with a purpose in mind. And obviously I think that was to bring those two together, Jericho and Ambrose at WrestleMania. Otherwise, as just a one-off thing, it didn't really make any sense. You mentioned Batista and Triple H. That's one match I would absolutely not want to see. I know it might be new for younger fans, but if you've been around a while, to me, that there's just no appeal in that. Like, those guys faced each other so many times.
Right.
And I just, that does nothing for me.
Would you rather see that or John Cena against Randy Orton again?
Yeah, I would rather not see either.
Right.
But, you know, I could see if Batista's in the mix. Batista and Lesnar, I think, is a match you could absolutely do.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a match years ago that Batista talked about at one time really wanting to do. It's never happened. And it's an easy story to tell, I think. You know, Lesnar's pretty much a babyface right now, and Batista, he kind of left on a babyface note at the end there, but, you know, he was a heel, you know, with the whole Evolution thing and all that. I think you bring Batista back as, you know, Mr. Hollywood kind of thing. It's very easy, I think, for Batista to play an unlikable character, and I think that's a marquee matchup. WWE loves, you know, first-time evers and all that. Those two guys, you know, have a very storied history in WWE. Their paths have crossed, but never directly. You know, they've been around at the same time, but they never had that big match. And I think that's a match you could do for sure.
Well, let me
Cena
bring up
and
this
Taker.
Yeah.
Cena and Taker. I would say this too. I think those two. I really wish they would have done this when the streak was still around.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been so much bigger. That's a match. Every WrestleMania season, I kept thinking, well, this year they're going to do Cena and Taker. And, man, if you had Cena as the champion going in, it would really be a lot of intrigue of, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Is Cena going to end the streak? Or is Taker going to win the title? Well, that can't happen because he's just a part-time guy. And I really think it would have been the biggest match you could do for Taker after he, you know, went through Shawn and all those other guys. But at this point, still, I think the two of the biggest icons in WWE history that have never faced each other on the big stage, they've had matches before, never at WrestleMania, seems like I don't think there are a whole lot of options for either one of those guys at
right.
WrestleMania. So it seems like those two facing each other first time ever on the big stage makes sense.
And then in WWE for Mania always likes to have this kind of iconic, you know, dream match, so to speak, kind yep. of thing. And to me, that's about the only thing that fits in the fold. Here's the only other options when it comes to the world title. Okay. And I expect Reigns to be champion going into it. Like if they took the title off him before then, I think that'd be a mistake. The only other options would be Brock Lesnar, but they did that last year. And the only way I could see Brock is if he was kind of like, you know, a hired gun by the McMahon family, but that's what Hunter, you know, is he really going to usurp Hunter for that? And then the only other one, too, is Cena and kind of this passing of the torch kind of thing. But I just to me, it just doesn't make sense. They've got a story right here when it comes to Roman and it comes to Hunter that makes all the sense in the world to go there.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, if you're looking at other potential scenarios, if it's not going to be Hunter and Reigns, obviously John Cena, you could do that. I would like see them hold off on that. Maybe that's WrestleMania 33, because I think you could really build to that one. And there's all kinds of ways you could go with that. You could do it, you know, the changing, almost like an Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, the battle of the two super baby faces, changing of the guard, passing of the torch moment. Or if you really want to get out there, you know, you could have John Cena turn heel. The reason they've held off all these years is that you never, okay, who's going to be the top baby face? Well, now you might have that guy in Roman Reigns. Maybe you could pull the trigger in a year from now on a Cena heel turn. And if Reigns and Lesnar, I thought ever since this past WrestleMania that that's where we were going.
Me too.
It was a great match, and it was very dramatic and hard-hitting, and you really got wrapped up in it, and then here comes Seth Rollins, and he ruined it, and you never got a finish. So I thought, okay, well, perfect sense. That's setting up next year for them to let's finally see who the better man is. And they still may go that way. I don't know. But after what I saw with Hunter, you know, being attacked by Reigns and what they did the next night on Raw with the McMahon family, it just doesn't seem like – it seems like they've gone on a detour. And I don't know if Reigns-Lesnar always was the plan, but if it was, at least on the surface, it seems like it's not the plan anymore. The other option, which I don't think there's much chance at all, is do you do Reigns and Undertaker? Which I think would really be a mistake at this point as you're trying to build Roman Reigns as this really super over babyface. To put him in against the legendary and beloved Undertaker, I think would do way more harm than good.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't think that one's an option.
Well, the thing is, like, even if they did Cena, a heel John Cena against Reigns, I don't think that would be a good match right now. Is you've just gotten to the point where the crowd's behind this guy. You got to keep him there.
Yeah.
So that means it's all up to who the villain is, who's standing across right. the ring from him. And to me, that's why Hunter, you know, makes the most amount of sense, because otherwise,
yep.
I think you're really in danger of losing that. By the way, we are agreeing way too much in this stuff. here's two wild card guys. Okay, I don't even think I'm going to be on the show, but if somehow, some way, both were healthy enough to be there, could really screw things up or change what they're doing. One is Daniel Bryan. I don't think he's going to be there. The other is Seth Rollins, who I don't want to be there because that means that he went through his rehab so quickly on a torn up knee. I would rather he take his time and not come back till a couple months after Mania rather than try to rush back from that injury.
Well, again, we're going to agree, you know, because I don't think Seth Rollins will be there, and I don't think he should be there. Let him do his rehab, let him take his time, and we'll deal. You know, it'll be a big return post Mania. That's something we can go to down the line. Daniel Bryan, look, nobody knows whether or not Daniel Bryan is going to be cleared ever in WWE, or if he's been cleared secretly and they're holding him off for the right moment. I don't know. What I do feel strongly about is, even if Daniel Bryan were to be on this WrestleMania card, I don't see a scenario where he's facing any of these top guys that we've just mentioned.
He faces Sheamus.
In a match. What's that?
Faces Sheamus.
That's exactly what I think. I could see him in a match against Sheamus. You know, they started to build towards that at one point. They have a history together. That's a match I could see. Him facing some of these other guys we mentioned and you know, one of the top three matches, I don't think that's in the cards, even if he were healthy.
Yeah, because then you maybe do Lesnar against Owens, I guess. I don't know, but, I mean, I don't think he's going to be on that show. Just they've mentioned his name on TV a couple of times lately, so I don't know if that just – let's get that name back out there, or if that's a, you know, we're just doing it, but, you know, he's not coming back. I mean, he's been pretty vocal about some different things and doing interviews overseas, you know, lately about, I don't know where I'm at right now and I want to come here. And, you know, even if they don't let me wrestle anymore, that I don't think my wrestling career is done. And I don't know what's going on with him. I think it comes down to WWE just being ultra safe. And, you know, I think Daniel could get all the doctors in the world to give them the stamp of approval, but when it's the WWE's own doctor that they've hired in Dr. Joseph Maroon that has said no, then they're going to go by his decision.
For sure. For sure. And I think, you know, another aspect of that is, like I said, it's not just WWE looking to maybe save him from himself and also, you know, save their own butts as well.
Yeah.
I just don't think they look at him as, well, we really need this guy back, and because he's our big, you know, he's not John Cena, and there is no need for them to put him or themselves, I think, at risk, because I don't think they think that the payoff that big anyway.
Well, I think part of it is
they don't look at him as that guy. Like, this is the guy that's going to fill Texas Stadium next year.
Right.
They don't look at him that way.
Well, I think part of it is too that if they were going to bring him back, I think they would have brought him back already, maybe, because if you bring him back and then something else happens, then it's like, I don't know, it's mixed, because then if something else happens, unfortunately, it's because of injury. If you just say, we're going to play it safe, we're not going to bring you back, and just kind of let it happen the way that it's happened. There's already been angst and people upset and whatnot. Now, obviously, none of us really know the real story of what's going on behind the scenes, but, you know, it's kind of like, if you bring him back, I mean, you're going to get people all riled up again. This way, it's kind of like we've gone through that process already, so we can just, you know, it sucks for Daniel, but, you know, it is what it is at this point.
I mean, look, none of us can walk in his shoes. I know he loves the business, and he's itching to get back in there, and he's got certain doctors that are telling him it's okay. Just my own personal opinion, you know, he even said, he had a quote where I think he said, you know, I guess I could find another passion or another hobby, but it wouldn't be, well, you know what? I really think he should. My advice to him would be, well, try. Try to find something else. Because, you know, it's just, I look at it as bigger picture. You know, he's married now. I don't know if he's looking at starting a family or whatnot, but, like, just move on. You know, I know it's tough, but I just don't know if it's worth the risk. You know, only he, you know, it's his body, it's his life. He's going to have to make that decision. I just don't know why he would want to risk, even if there's a small chance that something bad could happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Why go, you know, that's just me. I don't know why you would want to risk it.
I don't think he sees that as a risk, because he's just sitting there going, well, you know what, I could do this different, I could do that different, and I still love it. And plus, I've got these different doctors that are now telling me that, like, not only am I healthy, but my brain is in a better spot than a lot of other people at this age. So, you know, and he can say, well, I'm listening to my doctor. It's not even just me. It's multiple doctors are telling me this. So it's a tough situation for everybody involved. Speaking of a tough situation, I'm wondering about WWE when it comes to this Mania, because obviously they're going to sell the show off the name. But when it comes to specialty stuff, I mean, we mentioned, okay, so Daniel Bryan's injured. Seth Rollins is injured. Randy Orton is injured. The Rock might appear, but we don't expect him to wrestle now. Steve Austin might appear, but he's made it obviously he is not wrestling on that show. So I don't know what they could do when it comes to a special attraction or one of their bigger stars from the past making an appearance And so you don't have that element. You've got a somewhat depleted card or roster. A couple of your main guys are out. So, I mean, this is just kind of a patchwork job that WWE's having to work on. And they've got to sell that Mania name harder and harder and harder. That's why I kind of think they do that Cena-Taker match. And, you know, they got to put Roman in the situation they're in now. I think that's why they kind of need to keep, I'd like to see them keep Vince out there. And obviously they want to build up the McMahon, you know, family being villains again to do everything they can, because this isn't just a WrestleMania. This is, we're going to put 100,000 people and break our own attendance record WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, you know, to fill that stadium without a, you know, the lure of, hey, the biggest star in Hollywood, The Rock, is getting back in the ring. Or Ronda Rousey, obviously, that's not going to happen now. At least I don't think, and I don't think it would have the same luster. I think her losing, and you know, I don't think it would mean what it would have meant prior to her losing to Holly Holm. So I don't know that there's any big time athlete or celebrity out there that is going to attract people. So you're right; they're really going to have to just go on the WrestleMania name, and they kind of do that anyway. I mean, the show, whenever they put tickets on sale for WrestleMania, they sell way before any matches are ever, the tickets, you know, fly off, you know, just before any match is announced. So you really can sell it on the brand and the name, but to get that, that'll fill 70,000 seats maybe. But to get over 100,000, it does seem like you really need a big, huge attraction. And you're right. I mean, it ain't going to be The Rock. It ain't going to be Steve Austin. You know, Shawn Michaels ain't coming out of retirement. So, I don't know. They're going to have to just have really a really compelling storyline. Like you said, Cena and The Undertaker is kind of an icon match. Reigns fighting against The Authority and Triple H. That's going to have to sell it, you know, unless there's something that Vince is going to, you know, has up his sleeve that none of us are privy to. But, I mean, I can't even right now fathom what that would possibly be. That's going to capture, you know, Donald Trump going to come back and make an appearance.
The only celebrity or athlete that I can think of right now that could be on the show but would have to get approval is Conor McGregor.
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, would Dana White, would he allow that? I mean,
he allowed Ronda last year, but is he going to allow it a second year in a row?
Well, but Ronda wasn't even announced, right?
No.
Just kind of was there.
Ronda just showed up, yeah.
Surprise. And, I mean, to actually promote Conor McGregor, either being, I mean, are you saying in a match?
No, I mean, just making an appearance. He would have to, maybe he would be like a referee or an enforcer or, you know.
An enforcer?
Well, you can't say enforcer, yeah. Considering that he's 5'7". And nothing against Conor, who has all the talent in the world, but he's not exactly the most daunting enforcer. But maybe he's like ringside, you know, whatever. But to Bill Connor, and he gets involved in a match, you know, like one punch, you know, something like that, you know, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I'll pose it to you, because you're more in tune to MMA than I am, admittedly. You know, is he that? Does he have that kind of drawing power? I know Lesnar did. I know, yeah. Ronda Rousey does. And does he have that? If they put his name on the marquee, or they say he's going to be involved, not fighting, but he's going to be there in some capacity, does that sell one ticket? I don't know.
I think it does. I think it does now, because putting Conor on there is going to get them more mainstream coverage when it comes to some of these different sports outlets, because Conor has become such a big draw. I mean, we don't even know what the pay-per-view buy rate was from the show this past weekend where he won the championship, but everything trending right now is it's going to be huge. To me, it's not only having Conor part of that show, you got to have him on TV a couple of weeks leading up to it, and he's got to cut promos. Because that's where he's gold to me. I mean, he's been stellar, obviously, once he steps inside the octagon. But the guy is the king of hype right now. And to me, that's where he can definitely help you. Not only he's going to be there, but he's got to talk some smack leading up to it. He's got to be involved and go from there. I think that's where he can really help him. But you know, it's all up to does he want to do it? Does WWE see the star value in him? And would Dana White allow it to happen again? Those are big questions, but I do think he would sell not as many as Ronda, but I think he would sell some tickets.
I guess it'd be worth a shot. You know, the other thing would be, what is does Vince see value in him? You know?
Right.
And who knows? I don't know what the answer to
well,
that
is. Well, the size thing, I think, definitely is going to be like, woohoo, you know.
For sure. Yeah. There's no question about it.
Yeah. So let me ask you this one, too, because obviously with your experience and being with WWE and the creative team before, you know, the story's always been that Vince always kind of has a loose idea, you know, about a year out, kind of what he's thinking of, you know, for the main event the following year. This year, it's been kind of different because of the injuries and everything. But, and I know you weren't there at the time, but go back a year. Where do you think that they were thinking about going for WrestleMania this year originally?
Well, that's what I think where they were going. This is just, again, a guess, is I think they were looking at Lesnar and Reigns, you know, because the way that match was booked, it was Lesnar threw everything he could at Reigns. But Reigns, you know, he took it all and wanted more, and he was the kind of guy that was taking a beating, but Lesnar couldn't put him away. And then right before Rollins came out, you started to see Reigns kind of turn things around a little bit, had some hope, and then it ended. So it seemed like the way that match was booked that, you know, we never know who's the better man. We never know, and it would be 1 year later that we would find out. That would be my guess. And as you know, the plan all along was for Lesnar to lose to Reigns to really catapult Reigns to the next level. So I could very easily see them saying, well, okay, this isn't the year to do it, being this past March, obviously. And, you know, we're going to go with Rollins. He's going to cash in the Money in the Bank. But we're going to leave people wanting more as far as Reigns and Lesnar. We never got a decisive winner. Rollins threw a monkey wrench into anything. We could build that back up to 1 year later, now we will find out who the best man is. That would be my guess as to what they were thinking a year ago.
Yeah. And it's been so strange because, like I said, you know, normally they're looking, you know, a year out, and obviously, you know, plans change. And they did this year so much. A lot of it is just for a couple of reasons. Number one, where Reigns was at, now they've gotten him on track to where they want. But also, when you're talking about the injuries or you're talking about the availability of some, you know, major stars that they were kind of banking on before and now they're not going to get. So what was that process like when you were there when it came to thinking, you know, way out, you know, leading up to the following WrestleMania and how everything kind of came together? Like when was it actually talked about a lot when it came to people on the creative team?
Well, it really was, you know, as far as the big matches. Now, of course, when I got there, it was pretty much agreed on right away. Like, everyone knew that Rock Cena was going to be a, you know, even though it was billed as once in a lifetime, everyone knew that it was going to be a two-match series between the two of them. So, you know, that was kind of etched in there. And same with, you know, they usually try to figure out who Undertaker's going against and stuff like that. But one thing that, you know, like you said, the injuries this year really, more than anything, threw a monkey wrench into things. Last year, the last year that I was there, Daniel Bryan was the guy that threw a monkey wrench into everything. You know, there was this, and again, it had been planned out for a while that Batista was going to come in and win the Royal Rumble and all that stuff. And I think most people knew that, you know, Randy Orton and Batista for the WWE title just was not, it just was not WrestleMania worthy. You know, for whatever reason, Vince thought that match could work. You know, Batista was miscast as a babyface, so that was, you know, really when, all right, things aren't etched in stone, and the Daniel Bryan thing happened, and, you know, there was CM Punk stuff that happened, and things got turned around. But as far as, like, for the main guys, they really do like to have it out, you know, about a year or so in advance. I remember 1 year we were trying to figure out who John Cena's opponent was going to be. I can't remember which WrestleMania it was. We kind of run together a little bit. But we were throwing all kinds of ideas out there about who could be Cena's opponent. And again, this was way far in advance, maybe like a year before the next WrestleMania. Who could be John Cena's opponent? And we even thought, could it be Hunter? Because it's been a long time since they faced each other. And, you know, I can't remember who some, you know, a lot of big names we threw out there. And Vince shocked everybody and said, well, I can see it down to two guys. I can see it being one of two guys. Either Titus O'Neil or Fandango.
What?
And we all thought, I swear to God, we thought he was putting us on. And I, who knows, maybe he was. that he acted like it was 100% serious, that he wanted John to face a new guy, somebody they could build up, and that, you know, somebody John could work with that was, you wouldn't expect, and that they could really heat up. And his two choices at the time were Titus O'Neil and Fandango. I kid you not.
Are you surprised they haven't done more with Titus? Because to me, he seems like the kind of guy that Vince would be interested in pushing more, and there's always been kind of these teases of it.
Well, Vince loves Titus, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Vince loves Titus O'Neil, and I think he likes a lot. He likes his size, obviously, I think, and he thinks he's very entertaining. Sometimes Titus is entertaining. Sometimes I think his humor misses the mark. But Vince, for whatever reason, always finds like whatever Titus does entertaining. So I think Vince would really like to see Titus succeed. The producers, I know, were not the biggest fans of Titus's in-ring work. And I think that, a lot of times, is what sort of held him back, was that, it's going to be tough to really push this guy when he's so limited in the ring. I think he's still limited, but I don't know if he's gotten better to the point where they feel a little more comfortable with him. But yeah, Titus has a really he has an infectious personality, mm-hmm. and I do think he's entertaining. I think he's a really good spokesman for the company. When you see him go out and do PR-type things, I would love to see Titus O'Neil get a push. I don't know if he's ever going to be the world champion, but, hey, WWE could certainly use an African-American babyface, somebody in a prominent position, and I'd love to see Titus get that spot. The time to do it is sooner than later. I mean, Titus is not I think he's in his late 30s.
Yes.
So if they're going to pull the trigger on that, they need to do it. They need to do it soon. But Vince has always been a Titus O'Neil guy, always.
And he's a super good dude, like you said. I mean, just the things the way that, I mean, hell, look at what they did. What was it, like in October for Susan G. Komen when he was the guy that was in the ring talking as the spokesman for the company. That tells you what they think of him, at least in that role. I always thought that maybe they were going to do some more with him as a push, but like you said, it comes down to his in-ring work. So how much is that really talked about when it comes to, you know, how you weigh things when it comes to a personality and how well somebody can actually work in the ring?
It's definitely a concern. I mean, you got to have a guy who can go, especially if you're going to push him up to a potentially a main event level. You know, he has to be able to work main event level quality matches. And, could you get a 20-minute pay-per-view main event out of Titus O'Neil? I don't know.
Right.
I think there was real concern that he couldn't go at that level. And, I mean, look, I don't want to, you know, spread rumors about the guy or anything, but I think there was some concern that he wasn't always the safest guy in the ring. Not, you know, anything malicious, but just by his own, maybe not knowing his own strength and not being quite as skilled
technician
as he should be.
Well, look at the way he swings guys around. I mean,
exactly.
Like you just go flying and it's just like, oh, hopefully you can take a good bump off that, but there's no
right.
control.
So I think, yeah, that's where the concern was, I think, with Titus. I really think that it's incumbent upon WWE. I think they could really use an African-American guy that they can promote as a top guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Mark Henry's career is on the downside. And, you know, obviously New Day's great as a unit, but again, as a single star, here's the thing. Whenever you see the WrestleMania poster every year, you can always tell WWE, they want to show that they're diverse. So what do they end up doing? It's like every year they'll stick all the big stars on there and Kofi Kingston. And it always just kind of sticks out. Why is Kofi on there? And you're, oh, okay, well, that's why.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's why it was kind of...
They could put a guy on the poster who really, really was like a top-level guy.
I thought it was kind of weird when they just did the tournament for the championship. I thought, you know, Big E should have been in there. So that way you can at least say maybe down the line, you know, let's plant the seed right now that while New Day is a faction, they can also do stuff in singles, and Big E would be the guy. And maybe he would have won, like, one match in the tournament or something like that. But with the popularity of New Day and, you know, with Big E, I mean, he's the guy out of that group to me. If you're going to do a singles run, would be the guy.
I think so, too, yeah.
They could bring back the...
I'm sorry.
I was going to say they bring back the five-count pin with him.
That was a horrible gimmick. I was just going to say the last thing about Titus. The thing I really appreciate about him when I worked there is he really, really wants it. I mean, I think, I don't know if you've ever really talked to him. He really loves the business and wants to make it and is willing to do anything to make it. Whatever you ask him to do, he'll do it. He's a hard worker. It's like, you just appreciate a guy who, and I think he also knows the clock is ticking. He's not a spring chicken. And it's just, he really wants to make it. And even if there are times when you don't see Titus on TV or you don't see the primetime players on TV, know this, that he is always back there pitching ideas to the writers. He's always trying to see Vince and present him with a new idea. And, you know, I think that could sometimes rub some people the wrong way, but to me, I always appreciated a guy who had a lot of enthusiasm and really wanted to make it. Vince notices that kind of stuff.
And that brings me to a good segue, because I know that you wrote recently about the New Day, how they came together and pitching ideas and everything. So explain what you saw when it came to those guys, because I know they were kind of lost in the shuffle and suddenly they were together and there was a lot of question marks about those guys when they came together and if that was going to go anywhere. And now it's blossomed into what it is now.
Yeah, well, they were three guys who were all friendly with each other, and they came, you know, and as you said, they were kind of mired in the mid card, and Big E had gotten a little bit of a push, but then it stalled. Kofi's been in the same spot forever, and then you had Xavier, who was like he was done no favors. He was like Brodus Clay Jr., and you know, that was just destined to fail. There were three guys who thought, you know, hey, we all get along, maybe we can. For something, you know, maybe the sum of the parts will be greater, and we could do something together. And so they really, I hate to call it this, but for lack of a better term, it was sort of a new nation of domination kind of thing.
Right.
We called it that, we actually called it that internally, them being the new nation. So, you know, they got together. This was all on their own, really. They came up with the idea, and they presented it, and we started to go there. If you'll remember, there were, I think it only, you know, maybe one episode of Raw and like one episode of Main Event. The three of them were together, and, you know, it was, you could see they were heading in that direction. Xavier came out in a suit and started talking about, you know, we've been told what to do for too long, and we're going to stop asking, we're going to start taking, and you could really see where it was headed. And it was abruptly stopped. Now, I know this was near the end of my run with the company. Vince had decided that they could be a faction, and they could be heels and all that or whatever, but he did not want a racial aspect to it. He's like, the reason that these guys are together and their motivation or whatever can't be based on race. Now, in the writers' meetings that we had, and there were ideas of, well, you know, let's throw a white guy in there just so we really make it known that it's not about race. Kind of reminded me of, like, Owen Hart joining the Nation of Domination or whatever.
Right.
It just didn't make any sense to me, because I thought, well, there is an aspect of race to this that gives a little bit of an edge to it, and there's a way to do it where it's all in the language to me, and it's all in, you know, you write their promos and their dialogue in a way where you have to kind of read between the lines, or you can take things both ways, and you'll get the message across without being overt. But Vince was very steadfast in that this can't be about race, and so it was pulled off TV. And not long after that was when I left the company. So imagine, you know, my surprise, I'm, you know, a few months later, I turn on Raw, and here's those three guys doing these vignettes where they're, you know, they've got a choir clapping in the background, and, you know, they're doing like James Brown dance routines and stuff like that. And when I saw it, I knew, number one, that's not what those guys had in mind at all when they got together and wanted to be a faction. And number two, that there was no way that was going to work. And look, I'm not alone. I'm not a genius. I think everyone knew that thing was just never going to work, as babyface characters especially. It was just destined to die. And I felt bad, because all three of those guys, you know, they're all talented, and sort of like Titus in a way, they all want it. You know, every one of those guys wants to succeed. And I felt like the New Day in its babyface incarnation was just doomed to fail. But, again, I don't know exactly. Vince never explained to us why that they couldn't, you know, sort of be Nation of Domination 2.0, why he didn't want race involved. You know, I guess maybe he thought it wasn't PG or it wasn't family-friendly or You know, it might turn off some sponsors. I have no idea. One thing I wrote about just recently was, you know, there was an article that came out in The Atlantic right around that time that basically said, I think the headline was WWE is, or pro wrestling's fake, but its race problem isn't. And it basically spelled out, you know, pro wrestling's rather sad history of, you know, how minorities are stereotyped and marginalized, and used a lot of WWE examples. And my thinking, looking back on it, was, what did Vince, you know, that article was getting a buzz in the wrestling world at that time. Was it the fact that, you know, here are three characters on TV who are basically saying, we're not going to dance and sing and chuck and jive like you told us to do. We're taking over. Three characters basically giving credence to everything that article was accusing the WWE of. Is that why he said we can't do it? It can't be about race. I don't know. But what I do know, again, is that if they would have just became a faction of wrestlers who felt like they were being underutilized, and you were going to throw a Dolph Ziggler in there or, you know, whoever else, I don't think that would have succeeded either, because the only reason it had an edge to it is because there was an aspect of race to it.
Right.
But look, the whole thing's come full circle. The New Day babyface thing failed in such a way that it ended up becoming a huge positive for them. It was like the Honky Tonk Man syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to push him as a babyface. It was so bad, everyone hated it. So you take that, the fans' rejection of it, and you turn it on its ear, and now he's a huge heel because of it. It's exactly what happened with New Day. I can't say that I'm really surprised that those guys are over, because they're very talented, all three of them. I'm glad they've been given a chance. I'm a little surprised, though, it's gotten over as big as it has. You know, to me, it's surpassed expectations, and quite frankly, it's probably bigger than what would have happened even if they had been a Nation of Domination type faction. Probably wouldn't be as big as they are right now.
Right, and I think the one of the lessons to be learned here is two things. Number one, if you're given something, really go all the way with it. And two,
yeah,
you know, the letting the talent have so much say, because I mean they're the ones that made this happen to that degree, and that they come up with so many different things. Obviously, it has to get approved, and they have to pitch it, but they're the ones that are coming forward with all these different ideas, whether they're wacky or whatever they are, and they're the ones that are fueling all of this. And, you know, they're letting, you know, WWE, to a certain extent, is letting them run with it. I mean, not everything that they come up with, but a lot. And there's probably some stuff that I'm sure Vince and others go, I don't even understand this, but they trust them at this point. They let them do it.
Yes, they do. And, you know, the other thing they were fighting, I wanted to bring this up too, was pitching the idea of them being a heel faction, again, and this did happen while I was there, is that Vince just could not see Kofi Kingston being a heel in any, no matter what scenario was. He's like, I just don't think people will buy it. You know, Kofi's just such a nice guy in real life, and I don't think he can portray that. But again, you don't know until you actually let them try, and that was kind of some of the things you fight sometimes is, well, okay, maybe we don't think he can do it, but how will we ever know until he does it? Kofi worked as a heel in the indies. I know it's not the big stage of WWE, but it's not like he had never been a heel before. And let him try. Let him have something he can sink his teeth into, and you might be surprised at what he could do. And I think Cesaro has fallen into some of that as well. Tried to make Cesaro a heel at times, and Vince just never bought it, because if you ever met him in real life, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever want to meet. And
yep,
Vince feels like, well, that comes across on TV, and he'll never be a good heel. So, but again, you just don't know sometimes until you let guys go out there and try it.
I'll cop to something with one time I met Cesaro last year.
Yeah.
Met the guy. It was right after he had that fantastic match with Sheamus, okay? That was on TV. So, and I had previously met him, but I don't think he remembered me, because it was something at WrestleMania. So we were talking for a minute before I started doing the interview, and I mentioned, like, really enjoyed that match and everything like that. Started doing the interview, and I introduced him as Sheamus. Didn't even realize I had done it. And my camera guy goes, stop, stop, stop. And I was like, what? And he goes, you called him Sheamus. And I looked at Cesaro, and he had this look on his face like, are you freaking kidding me? And he was cool about it, but it wasn't that long of an interview, because I was such a dumbass. Yeah.
So you're actually the one person who got a rise. Like, I don't think I've ever seen Cesaro mad at anybody ever. You're the one guy that he got mad at?
Yeah, he kind of gave me this look like, you got to be kidding me.
Congratulations.
And I tried to make a joke out of it. I was like, okay, give me the uppercut. I deserve it, you know? And I really said that. I stuck my jaw out, you know? And he was just like, no, let's go. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, what have I done? That's the only time I've ever done that. And I didn't even realize I did it. It was just because it was in my mind because we were talking about it. And, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure if I bring it up now, you'd have a good laugh about it, you know? But at the time, yeah, he wasn't pissed, but at the same time, he wasn't cool about it. So, yeah.
All right. So the next, if I ever come across Vince McMahon ever again,
yeah,
I could say to him, because he always says, you know, Cesaro just doesn't have it in him to be an a-hole. I could say, you know what? I know a guy who could actually bring it out of him.
That's
and
me.
I think if you meet Brian Fritz and just let him have a conversation with Cesaro before the red light goes on, I think you can get what you're looking for.
Hey, I'm also the same guy that years ago got a pissed off Vince McMahon laughing 3 minutes later. So I can, it goes both ways with me. Okay. I can turn frowns upside down too. Okay.
All right. Put smiles on people's faces. That's what we do.
I did, even though he not only was pissed going into the interview with the person he spoke with before me, but then when I tried to make a joke, I got the deadpan look where I was like, I just dug my hole deeper. But by the end of speaking with Vince, and I capped it off with, some kind of joke. I can't remember it now. What was the line that he did? It was the, the sex joke he made about with Linda. What was the name he called himself?
Genetic Jackhammer?
That's it. I said, how's the genetic jackhammer doing at home? And that got him going. So, yeah.
That got him, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good, pal.
It was good. I got a picture with Vince out of it, in fact, where he damn near crushed me. Because I wouldn't do that there, especially to Vince, but I was just like, when am I ever going to meet Vince McMahon again? So I was just like, I'm going to take advantage of it while he's in a good mood. So I did. I was like, what the hell? So let me bring up one other guy real quick, too. The guy that's always like in perpetual motion of, I don't know what the hell to do with him. And I think going into Mania, he's definitely in that again. Is Bray Wyatt. So what the hell do they do with this guy? Because I still don't think WWE totally understands him.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt's a tough case, you know, especially with the introduction of Braun Strowman into the group. I thought for a while, and I'm still not 100% convinced it's not happening, is that are they possibly building up Braun Strowman as a monster to face
Taker.
Undertaker?
Right? Yeah, who doesn't want to see that? Come on, boys. It's a big match. It's big guys. Everybody likes the big guys. Huh?
That's right. Yeah, I really thought that was, who knows, they may still go that way. I don't know. But it's almost like Bray, in some respects, almost seems like a manager type in some, and that Braun is now going to be the guy that's pushed as this big, unstoppable monster. I don't know. I mean, look, I think what they've done with Strowman's been great. Like, I know people bust on him or whatever, but, like, hey, guys that are that big and look that gruesome and all that, like, they really, you know, they're hard to find. So, like,
it is.
Yeah, absolutely they should try to make that guy into a monster and try to make money.
They just brought him up too soon. They brought him up too quickly because that was one of those things where he's a big guy, so let's bring him up, and he's trying to make the best out of a situation.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential there. I really do, and I might be in the minority, you know, I don't know. But I think he gets a reaction just because the sheer size of the guy. You know, I could see that guy. I could see WWE trying to put that guy on top and make money with him for a while. And who knows? Might have a short shelf life. Might never work. You know, it's funny, JBL is always comparing him to guys like Jeep Swenson and Ted Arcidi, and it's like, that's not really good, you know? You're not comparing the guy to, like, Hulk Hogan here. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if that's what he's going to be, if he's going to be the next Ted Arcidi or Jeep Swenson, it's going to be a pretty lousy career.
Jeep Swenson, there's a name, man. Oh, my God.
There's a name from the past. He was in the Batman movie.
Yeah. But speaking of names, have you been watching on the network? Have you been watching the old NWA World Championship Wrestling TV shows?
I haven't been watching them recently, but obviously I watched all of them back in the day.
Dude, you got to turn those on, man. The jobber names are just unbelievable. It's guys you're like, oh, my God, I can't remember that dude. And just looking at some of the bodies on some of these guys and some of the outfits that they wore, it's just like, that was a bad choice that day, buddy. That singlet right there, that wasn't good, you know, but maybe it was done on purpose. Just, I mean, you might as well just, you know, tattoo jobber on the guy's head. But
back in those days,
right.
I mean, the local jobbers would come to TV and I would, like, you would see guys, worked both shows. I mean, look, living in Maryland, I knew a lot of those guys, like Joey Maggs and Bobby Starr, and some of those guys. They would work the WWE tapings, and they would also work the NWA tapings. You know, they'd see those same kind of guys with their their indie looks and their their pale bodies with no tans. And
yeah.
It was something. But yeah, you would see the, and man, it was a different world back in those days. Like they were literally just tackling dummies, who were just fed to these guys to make the stars look good. It was, you certainly don't see anything like that nowadays, but every once in a while, some of those guys would become cult heroes too, like the Mulkey brothers.
Mulkamania was running wild in one episode.
Mulkamania did run wild.
Oh, well, that one year when they actually made it into the Crockett Senior Crockett Memorial Cup. Oh my God, what an upset that was. All because somebody tripped over one of them and they got the pin.
That's right. Like the Gladiators or some kind of
right.
mass tag team.
Who were, yeah, who it was, yeah, they tried to yeah. build them up and the Monkees made it in. And in the first round, who did they have to face? Arn and Tully, I believe.
I think that's right.
They ripped them a new one. Oh, man. I was watching one the other day and I felt bad for some dude that got ripped apart by Luger. Because Lex was throwing him around like a rag doll and then gave him the torture rack, of course. And I was just like, man. I mean, and the guy looked like the wrestling version of Sir Oliver Humperdinck, just with longer hair. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy, man. This poor. I hope he's getting paid well tonight, man. This dude's getting ripped. So,
I don't think they got paid that well. I used to remember the Road Warriors would always.
God.
Doomsday device off the top. I mean, sometimes the guy would, do like two rotations of flips in the
yes.
air and land on his neck.
Guy got, turned inside out, man. Oh, my
yeah.
God. So when,
hey, you know what? They wanted to be involved in the business, and that was their way in.
It was. So when we watch Raw on Monday, what are the chances WWE works in, for better and probably for worse, a Star Wars skit?
Well, probably, I'd say there's probably a pretty good chance. I mean, they've got you go to WWE.com, I think it's still up there, they've got an interview with Harrison Ford, believe it or not. I know you're a big Star Wars geek, so you're probably calling it up on your computer right now.
I will right now. Probably with, it was that like the thing that with Renee?
I think it was the thing with Renee. Yeah.
Where
they actually got Harrison Ford.
Man.
Yeah, pretty safe bet that'll happen. I don't get Star Wars. I never have. I never will. So it won't mean much to me. Sorry to break that to you.
Is it bad that I didn't even know this was happening until like right before it aired, but there was a half hour, especially a half hour edition of SportsCenter where they went into detail on the genesis of lightsabers and lightsaber battles and how it's an aching to old samurai warriors and kendo?
That's sad.
Okay, so I did watch that, okay, man. I was like, well, I got to watch this now. This looks pretty cool, so...
And sometimes, sometimes pop culture is lost on him, but I'm pretty sure even though he kind of lives in a bubble, that even he knows that Star Wars, is it The Force Awakens? Yeah, December 18th is happening. So
somebody has to come out with either the Princess Leia bun haircut from the first months or from the original Star Wars, or in the Princess Leia gold bikini.
Well, I wouldn't be opposed to that. I mean,
I'm
not a big Star Wars guy, but, hey, who doesn't like that?
I think that's the one outfit that Mickey James never broke out between WWE and TNA. Everything else but the gold bikini.
Yep.
Well, everybody,
I don't know. Is the gold bikini, is it PG? That's the question.
Ooh.
I guess it was. Well, Star Wars was always PG, right?
Well, this one's PG-13, though.
Oh.
And I know that they've announced, Carrie Fisher has announced that the gold bikini has been retired, but I don't think anybody's going to be upset if somebody else that fits it very well breaks it out,
Speaking of bikinis and such in wrestling, do you remember for a while when WWE was, they've loosened up a little bit, but do you remember when they were at the height of their PG political correctness, when they had like the girls come out in like 1950s bathing suits for like an angle? Do you remember that?
Yeah, unfortunately I do.
Like in one pieces?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Let's make sure that we cover. I mean, it doesn't just go past the butt. It's got to go like all the way down to the knees,
It was like their normal wrestling attire showed more, but they were out there in like these old women bathing suits.
It was like the outfit that Mae Young used to wear when she was young. Like, yeah, that was the fashion trend,
right.
But they're bringing it back.
Yeah.
That was, God, I've got a feeling that people are going to be, I don't know if it's going to be funny, but people are going to be rolling their eyes with some goofy Star Wars skit on Monday where people are going to be like, okay, we knew that was coming, but it was, as long as it's not like an ongoing theme. I mean, I could see the New Day mixing it in, but I don't want to see a lightsaber battle on Raw.
Well, they already slipped in a reference this past week with Neville and Miz, right? The little backstage where Miz said he could get him in the next Star Wars movie, and I think Neville's like, oh, I'll stick a lightsaber where the sun doesn't shine.
So, right.
They already got in their little pop culture reference.
Maybe that's enough.
I mean, cutting edge.
Yeah, exactly, man. Cutting edge. So, well, everybody can go online.
I worked at WWE. I'll tell you this too. At least when I worked there, there were a lot of Star Wars. Well, you can say this. I guess there's Star Wars geeks everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
There are definitely Star Wars geeks in that writer's room. No doubt.
Oh, I can only imagine. Well, the funny thing is that if the boys really want, they can actually go see the movie on opening day. Where, I mean, I know everybody's pitching that it opens on Friday the 18th, but it actually begins at theaters Thursday night the 17th. And it's not like midnight either. It's a normal time. Like, I'm going to see it Thursday night at 7 o'clock Eastern. So, you know, if they really want to, if everybody's really geeking out, they're not going to be on the road and they can actually go see Star Wars.
Well, here, I have a streak going, and I'm going to keep it going. I haven't seen a Star Wars movie since the original in 1977. That's the only one I've seen.
You haven't even seen Empire Strikes Back? What's wrong with you, dude?
Nah, man, I'm just, you know what? Because I saw the first one in the theater, right? I was 10 years old at the time. I'll date myself. Yeah, I'm old. I was 10 when it came out. All my friends were talking about it and everything. So it's like, all right, let's go see it. And I was just like, it's all right. I don't really see the big attraction to it. Then it came on network TV, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll give it another chance. I'll watch it again. I think I fell asleep the second time.
Oh,
I was bored to tears by it. And like, I've never watched any of the sequels. The prequels. And the more I hear about it, the more people talk about it, and the more I'm inundated with it all over TV and social media, the more I'm resolute that I'm not into it. I won't watch it.
Yeah.
And I will not be a party to it. I will not participate.
Well, you know what?
Well,
Star Wars is the first movie I ever remember. I was 4 when I saw it, and I saw it at a drive-in theater. So it's kind of like, well, I'm hooked. And I enjoy the first 3 movies. The other 3, it's like, you know? But it's not like I know everything about it. But, yeah, I enjoy a lot of Star Wars. So I got to go see it opening night. Yeah, you're missing out. In fact, tonight, I got to watch Return of the Jedi because I watched Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back again. So I got to watch Jedi since the new one takes place like 30 years after Jedi. So I got to prep for this.
All right. Well, you know, maybe if I have some insomnia tonight, maybe I'll try to find one.
That's so cold, man.
Get a good night's sleep.
God, you don't even have the movies at your house. Where are you going to find them?
No. Find them on demand or something. I don't know.
No, they're not on demand. You can turn on Spike and watch. You can turn on Spike and watch Rocky at any time you want. But I had like a half hour in between what I was watching last night on TV, and the fight was coming up in Rocky 4. My wife is like, "Are you kidding me? We're doing this again?" I was like, "Yeah, we are." Like, come on.
I know my lack of love for Star Wars makes me a real heel to a lot of people, but. Hey, I can't pretend. Would you rather I just jump on the bandwagon? And
no.
Because it's popular?
No. I mean, I respect it that you're like that. It's not like you're down on people and you're bad-mouthing it. I mean, hell, I went to...
Well,
that's just your nature, though. Your natural heel. I went to a Star Wars ride at Disney recently, and I get off, and some lady unsolicited, and it's not like she's old or really young. She's probably around 30 years old, but just unsolicited, out loud, started barking about, well... It's no Star Trek, you know. Star Wars is for, you know, dummies, you know. It's the dumbed-down version of Star Trek. And I was like, what the hell is bringing this all about? It's like, I told her, I go, this is the wrong place to be making this argument right now.
Well, our wrestling conversation, I know, is taking a huge detour here to Star Wars. But the last thing I got to ask you this is, as much as you're a fan of the movies, aren't you, are you in some way, I don't know if offended is the right word, but the fact that it's so commercial, and it's like there's such a marketing campaign behind it, and like fast food, you know, chains are getting involved, and the toys and everything has just got the Star Wars logo slapped on it. Doesn't that just turn you off to it in some way?
Yeah, I mean, the commercialism, it's getting over the top. I'm just trying not to pay attention. And now, like, my biggest fear is that people that got to screen an early copy of it, you know, for reviews, so they're now all out, like, giving the reviews without trying to give spoilers. But I'm worried somebody is going to spill the beans, and they're going to have to be tried in public and, you know, tarred and feathered or something if they do that.
Well, yeah, all these Star Wars fans who don't want to see the spoilers, I guess they really better lock themselves in their parents' basement. You know?
Oh, no, they can't do that because that's where their wrestling fan, you know, their brothers are or something.
Oh, that's true, right.
Mm. That's where you grew up, right?
Pretty much. Pretty much. Who am I to criticize anyone being a geek for liking Star Wars, right, when I like pro wrestling, you know, Kiss,
yeah,
and some other things I probably shouldn't even admit to. So,
hey, man.
Hey, we all have our crosses to bear. And our guilty pleasures.
Dude, I'm going to see Star Wars on Thursday night, and then Friday morning at 10 o'clock, tickets go on sale for AC/DC in Miami in March, okay? So I'm going to be all over that to go see some AC/DC.
Well, that doesn't quite, you don't quite redeem yourself for the Star Wars geekdom, but it's just a step in the right direction.
That's right,
you know,
there.
You know who loves, you know whose favorite band AC/DC is, right?
Oh, that would be Mr. Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
That's right, pal.
Right. Let's get our pump on. Put some AC/DC, buddy. Yeah. Oh, man. Everybody go online. Check out the Eck Factor blog. Go to kevineckwrestling.sportsblog.com. It's you have to read this thing. If you're not, you're a loser. You're a bigger geek than Star Wars fans.
Nobody's still listening at this point because
they're listening. They're listening.
Everybody checked out once we got into Star Wars.
I've gone into Star Wars like three different podcasts now. I don't care. It's a cultural thing. You have to do it. So
that's true.
Well, Kevin, I hope I took your mind off your sports teams and your fantasy sports, you know, team as well. The failure there. So, and I appreciate you coming on.
Anytime, Brian. Anytime.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Man, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you. Have a good